surface of the sword when it dropped.
I never said that, and I never would say that. But there's something dark and unholy and evil about that blade, and I wish you'd put it away.
He gave her an elfish smile.
Okay, blade gone. Won't see it again.
Now she was gone, and the sword had reappeared. The jewels encrusted in the hilt of the blade felt cool against his pale white hands as he hefted the weapon high over his head, cool and comforting, like they belonged there as part of him.
No peace? So be it.
Alone in the world, he saddled his great steed and rode west, following the trail of the ones who'd taken his wife and child. It wasn't as hard as it might have seemed, since no care had been taken to cover their tracks. Even when Jack thought he was lost, the sword sheathed at his hip would act as a sullen guide, pulling him back on course, the deep blue of the metal attracted by some hidden magnet. Once his horse was spooked by a hissing rattler, and Jack fell from the saddle as the equine reared in fright. The armor he'd taken from the closet, and now wore, protected him from the impact of the fall as he landed heavily on the rocky sand. Transport was going to be another matter, since his steed ran past, frightened, leaving Jack alone with his thoughts.
Not alone.
A rattler slithered close, warily keeping the coils of its body out of reach of Jack's blade. The unmistakable chittering of the rattle at the end of the snake's tail provided accompaniment to the reptile's sinuous movements.
What? Thought I'd...
Not alone.
Hear you in Hayed.
Yes.
Where are they?
Not safe. Not yet. No one is safe. Not yet.
Not safe?
No one. Not even you.
And the rattler started to grow in height and bulk. Combination of inflating and expanding, stretching and elongating, pulsating and reaching, that raised it to a height of 30 feet.
You die now! You die!
No, you do!
Jack leapt to one side as the massive head of the reptile came striking down incredibly fast. White fangs bit into tan sand and stone, and the entire landscape seemed to rock from the impact. Jack was once again sent tumbling. But this time he was expecting the fall, and he quickly rolled and regained his footing. The serpent, momentarily dazed by the missed strike, didn't bring up its huge head, but instead kept it close to the ground as undulating coils pushed it toward the waiting Jack. Hurtling like an air-to-surface missile, the head picked up speed and came directly for its intended target, like a launched arrow from a bow. And again, the agile albino was able to sidestep the attack. Even as he avoided being struck, Jack released his own offensive, bringing his sword above his head in preparation. As he swung the sword down in an elegant, reaching arc, the entire blade seemed to glow with a translucent blue. And before he could react to the appearance of the unexpected light, the blue grew past the weapon and crawled up his arm and across his shoulder and up and down his body, coating him in blue, obscuring his sight, his mouth, his mind.
No peace!
Peace!
The oversized head of the rattler was sliced off neatly, and a spray of blue blood squirted outward. Lifeblood as blue rain pouring through the halo of blue light surrounding Jack. And he was frozen in place in the dark of the desert, alone and helpless. Helpless in blue. Mildred was dreaming. She was wearing a Greek toga, or some sort of filmy outer garment that rippled around her body. She was adrift in blue. Ice blue. Icy cold. Her keen physician's mind reminded her that Greek for icy cold was cryos, the study of cryonics, the preservation of the living dead. The only part of her body that seemed to be working was her eyes, so she looked around frantically, managing to catch a glimpse of herself in a mirror. Again, she was blue. Lips, face, hair, all blue. Then she heard a voice. Dr. Victoria Blue's voice. The voice of her colleague and friend. They were active in the cryo program together. Mildred was confused. Why was Victoria looking down at her with a strained, sad smile?
The cyst!
Mildred wanted to scream, and immediately she knew she was in for abdominal surgery on an ovarian cyst. Or rather, what they believed to be a cyst. It was December 28th of the year 2000, on the cusp of the new year.
We're losing her! There's no other way. The cryo process is experimental, but we'll have to make the attempt.
Mildred blinked, and the bedroom was gone, replaced by the neutral blue tones of a hospital ward. The walls were whipping past her, faster and faster. She tried to speak, but found her voice missing. She still couldn't move. She looked down her prone body and saw her bare feet at the bottom of the gurney. Mildred tried to wiggle her toes. They stayed frozen. Then she noticed her feet and her toes were blue as the twin doors looming up in front of her parted like stage curtains, and she was inside and through. Then came the large tub made of metal, fabric, and Naga hide. Then the underwater pump and the distribution system. Mildred recognized the system other cryospecialists had coined Squid. After a person was placed inside the tub, a couple of 100 pounds of ice were added along with numerous buckets of water. Then, with a flip of the switch, the squid would start circulating the water very rapidly around the body. The process dropped the temperature much more quickly than just packing a person in blocks of ice. The IV lines already in her arm for the surgery on the cyst were now being used again, this time to assist in the cryopreparation process. That much Mildred recognized from the procedure she had carried out on others personally. An assortment of medications were being dumped into her bloodstream. First, heparin to prevent blood clots, potassium chloride or phenobarbital of some kind. Other chemicals to depress the brain metabolism so that the cells could stay alive in a less active state. Something to keep the acidity level of the pH proper. Calcium channel blockers to prevent calcium from traveling into the cells and starting a number of chemical reactions that typically do a lot of brain damage. Mildred reeled, her heart pounding in terror as she recognized the procedure she was beginning to endure. Why was she still awake? When the scalpel fell on her leg, the pain was excruciating. The clinical part of her doctor's mind noted her friends were doing a femoral bypass, opening up the femoral artery and vein in the leg and hooking up a pump to flush her entire vascular system. Victoria Blue was still with her, but new cast members were being added to the operating stage, one by one. First, a thoracic surgeon came in, leading a team of 12 with carts of instruments and med gear. The surgeon looked down and, without any warning, shoved a scalpel into her chest. Classical music was playing on the sound system in the room as he proceeded to do a textbook example of open-heart surgery while the paralyzed and helpless Mildred Wyeth watched herself be sliced open. She knew why. The point was to get tight control of the circulation. This was to make sure if any clots developed around her heart, there was still control to get the fluid to the brain. She also knew what was coming next, as all of the water in her body was replaced with a glycerol-based mix of fluids to prevent damage from occurring during the freezing process. For obviously, in cryo storage, any water or moisture turned to ice. After the perfusion with glycerol was complete, Mildred was lifted and placed in a chill bath of silicone oil. The oil was pumped through dry ice, and once she was secure, they left her, returning after her body had dropped to the temperature of the ice. She was placed in a special tank wrapped in a sleeping bag and in an aluminum pod for protection. Liquid nitrogen was sprayed in, and she dropped to minus 196 degrees centigrade. Then she was tucked away in a stainless steel tank, vacuum insulated, and held in limbo, her mind still screaming, suspended at that temperature until science caught up someday. But the subjects weren't supposed to be conscious, more alive than dead, seeing yet not dreaming. A single tear crept from her left eye and froze a shining trail on her cheek. If Mildred had been able to see her face, she knew the color of the tear would be blue. Dean was back in the bucking hold of a boat, caught in the center of a violent storm. He could look at the bulkheads, and he knew he'd been there before, and something triple bad was going to happen. But there wasn't a thing he could do about it, except sit, wait, and watch, hoping the events wouldn't follow their earlier pattern. That above, his father and JB would be able to steer clear of the danger, the coming danger that Christy was now warning them of. The redhead could feel it coming, she was saying, just like she'd said the first time.
Something's wrong. Something's bad wrong. That to warn Ryan. There's danger.
Then came a final crash of thunder, and everyone in the crowded section was thrown back, and then heaved forward as the yacht yawed from the impact. And this time, when the explosion went off and the front half of the nose of the patch was nigh-high vaporized, bringing in a crushing flood of blue-black seawater, he didn't manage to scramble his way to the upper deck and safety. This time, Mildred didn't grab a handful of the boy's shirt tail and pull him upright. This time, like Christy, who'd been